Thank you for watching, everyone. For our latest Artemis Live video interview, I'm delighted to reconnect with the CEO of one of the largest global reinsurance companies, Christian Mumenthaler of Swiss Re. Christian, really good to see you again. A year on from our last interview, I hope all is well.
Thank you, Rami. Always good.
So, since our last discussion, the reinsurance market has continued to harden, and we've seen capital levels have not yet bounced back to the excess we had perhaps previously seen. But there are very positive signs in areas of the capital markets, such as catastrophe bonds, and investor sentiment there has been recovering. And it's recovering for some other private ILS products as well, in line with the rising yields available. But the other side of the balance here is that inflationary factors are continuing to drive exposure values and loss costs higher, and climate change effects and natural catastrophe losses continue to elevate the claims experience in the industry. On top of that, demand for protection is also rising, and alongside the other factors, it means the industry appears quite finely balanced right now as we begin to look towards the end of the year. So there's always a lot to discuss at this time of the year, but in 2023, it seems we actually have a need for more capital and coverage, but the costs of it have risen significantly. So I wanted to dive right in to ask your thoughts, Christian, on whether the market is doing enough on efficiency to make the cost of capital in the industry and ultimately the cost of protection more affordable.
Thank you, Steve. This is obviously an important question, and we get asked that a lot. And there's many different components to that one. I think the first we need to really look at is the overall cost to the consumer when they get some policies. And there's a whole value chain, as you know, that's behind it, and where is which component. So we all know that the distribution costs are very high because most people choose to have somebody counseling them, a broker, an agent, et cetera. That takes a huge chunk of margin out. Then there's an insurer who has to do a lot of the administration, the management of the risk. Then there's usually another broker involved in transferring that risk to reinsurers. And then reinsurers themselves, of course, have to bear the risk, but they have need a margin for the capital, and they have their own costs. And then many reinsurers pass it on even further to capital markets or other reinsurers. So we have to look at the total cost of all of this. And within that, the pure, let's say, costs that a reinsurer has is very tiny. There's many other opportunities in my view. This said, I think it's a very competitive market. We shouldn't think otherwise. It's very competitive. And in particular, on the cost side also, all reinsurers I'm aware of have been saving significant costs, and cost ratios have been coming down. So in the example of Swiss Re, over the last 10 years, we kept our costs flat. So we absorbed inflation, we absorbed the growth of Corso, we grew iptiQ, we did a lot of things, and yet we kept the cost flat, whereas top line grew by 50%. So, and that's not so different from others. So like other competitive fields, there is a pressure, constant pressure to become more effective. The rise you're seeing is not death. The rise you're seeing is the actual consequences in many cases of our behavior and climate change. That's a result of the way we chose to live and the consequences we have to pay for that, i.e., the increased risk.
Yes, no, that's a great point, and very interesting that you mentioned keeping costs flat while growing the top line so significantly. It's a very impressive result over the last few years, particularly through issues such as the pandemic and the inflation environment we've seen. But as a company that has always expressed a desire to help narrow protection gaps, do you think perhaps we need a renewed focus on improving efficiency within the value chain itself?
Yeah, so the protection gap is a topic we're very passionate about, and I know many other industry players are passionate about because, as you know, there's a significant protection gap, more than 50% overall in the world. So there's a lot of catastrophes that happen that are not covered. And we also know from research that if they're not covered, economic recovery is much slower if it's not insured. So this is a key goal. Now, the protection gap comes from different places. So there's a place in the world where people cannot afford insurance, and there the role of government is really important, and innovation, technology, et cetera. And we're making some progress there. But in the developed world, so-called developed world, there's still a huge protection gap, even though people could pay the premium. It's affordable, but they choose not to pay it. And the reasons for that are more psychological. A lot of people maybe hope the state would come in, or they hope it wouldn't happen to them, et cetera. I mean, the act of buying insurance as seen by, you know, behavioral scientists, is actually a very difficult act for the human brain to think about the future, to think about the negatives. So there's a big hurdle. And whatever we do, and we have been working on this subject for a long time, this protection gap seems to persist. And the only way to close it in many instances is, unfortunately, for the state to play a role, to sort of force in some minimum level of insurance, et cetera. That's what we see in the world. That's just the facts. And so, yes, you know, lowering prices, become more efficient might help. But since the actual issue is more, you know, how we function, a psychological issue, I think it's going to be hard to close the protection gap just based on efficient pricing. I think it's impossible.
No, it's interesting you mention education there, because that seems a really critical piece of the puzzle still today. And moving on a bit, we've seen a costly period for the so-called secondary peril losses again this year, and reinsurers have been a little more removed thanks to the more recently installed terms and conditions on treaties, the higher attachments and the like. And I was wondering, how are you seeing this play out at Swiss Re this year?
No, we're certainly happy with how things have evolved. I mean, we see our role as being the insurer of insurers for the very grave cases and, you know, big hurricanes, earthquakes. So this year we paid a very significant part in the, you know, earthquake in Turkey. But when it comes to many of these secondary perils, think about floods or think about fires, the micro position of the house, for example, plays a much bigger role. You can assess it on the ground for the specific house, which means there's a much bigger role for the primary insurer who actually writes it to make sure they have a good portfolio. It makes much more sense for some of those to be kept by primary insurers because they directly control where they underwrite. And of course, Swiss Re and other insurers, we're happy to help. We have some tools, we have some science behind it, etc. But this distribution makes more sense in my mind, that the smaller events that are more local are carried by the insurance companies, whereas reinsurers are there for the very big events. And so this year, indeed, again, we had a whole series of smaller events, in particular in the US, with a lot of convective storms. And some of the insurers have suffered quite heavily, yeah.
Yes, it's and those events obviously have continued into the third quarter with some sad events happening in Hawaii and other places in the world. If we move forwards to look at the end of year renewals, negotiations are always set to begin over the key meetings coming up in the next few weeks, beginning with the RVS in September. What are your expectations this year? I mean, do you think the market can sustain the prices increases that we've seen, or perhaps even harden further? Or a lot of people are saying it's really down to the Atlantic hurricane season, but I'd like to think that the industry thinks a bit more broadly about its pricing than just a single peril.
Yeah, well, you'd like to think so, but of course, pricing dynamics are, you know, time correlated. So the past plays a big role in what's going to happen. And so it is, that's why it's always very difficult to predict it, because it really depends very much on not just one peril, but whatever natural catastrophe activity we see in Q3 and Q4. But we shouldn't forget that the industry has gone through a pretty bad period with a lot of losses, not just the natural catastrophes, also COVID and other things. And the reinsurers in particular have been the shock absorber for a lot of the negative things of the last few years. And in the end, we're all one value chain, and it is necessary that every piece, you know, gets the capital from shareholders. And there's a dire need for reinsurers to have a higher return, to go back, you know, to have an average over time that is sufficient. So I see a huge need for reinsurers to become more profitable at this stage. And so I think this will also sustain prices as we go through. Now, if you have big losses, I could absolutely imagine prices to go further up. If there's absolutely nothing happening, we will see. So there's this time correlation that's going to be playing a role. But overall, from an environment, if we have a normal load of NatCat, I absolutely see hard market to sustain for a few more years.
Mm. Yes, and the profitability angle really is the key one there, isn't it? It's the industry itself needs to deliver the returns that shareholders and other investors require for putting their capital at risk. And recently, your CFO, John Dacey, said that Swiss Re are still not satisfied with pricing in certain regions such as Florida, at least not enough to grow exposure there. But what do you think it might take to get more Swiss Re capacity backing insurers in that type of marketplace?
Yeah, Florida is a bit an outlier for many years. There's this tradition in terms of it not being a totally free market. There's a lot of intervention and the legal environment being a big challenge. So we had this Hurricane Irma, whose losses have gone up and up and up, but it was more due to the legal environment, which makes it very difficult to predict. One thing is to predict the damages, of course, but if then you have legal battles that lead to significant increase in the costs, that makes it very uncertain. Now, there were some reforms and we need to see how they work, but at this stage, we still choose to be underweight in Florida. So we will see if prices go further up, if these reforms work, Florida might be an easier place for us to put some, you know, shareholders' capital at risk, but at this stage, it's still difficult.
And I think it seems to be becoming difficult for some people in other areas of the world as well, such as California. So we hope that the pricing will be sustained to cover the loss costs at the very least in these regions. Now, Swiss Re's alternative capital and insurance and securities businesses have been expanding over the last few years, but how do you see the business positioned in the current market climate? I guess it's interesting versus your own deployment of shareholder capital as well. And what do you think Swiss Re can offer the investors that perhaps other asset managers are struggling to provide?
Yeah, as you know, I'm quite passionate about the topic since I led this unit at Swiss Re a long time ago in 2000, 2001, 2002, where we did the cap bonds and some innovation there. So I really believe in the system and I'm very proud about our alternative capital unit. It has been very successful. It's built up significant capacity. We were particularly successful in the last few years in the sidecar activity, so where investors specifically can choose also a bit which regions and to specifically tailor deals where they share exactly our book. So there's no difference between us and them. They share some slice of our book. And of course, we have to always balance how much business do we get in and how much do we put out. And so there's periods where we don't have enough investors and periods where we have too many investors. And we need to balance this out to create something sustainable also over time. We cannot afford to suddenly have no capacity. So we need multi-year capacity and commitments. But overall, I definitely see the capital market playing an important role. There was a bit of exuberance the last few years and exaggerations and some, I think, mistakes were done. But the market is back to a pretty rational state where I think capital market actors can make good returns. I think we will need capital market, in particular for the very big peak risks, where reinsurance cannot be 100% efficient anymore because of diversification issues. And I think the collaboration has also been changed. So a lot of these investors are now coming behind the big reinsurers, recognizing that they have an advantage by knowing the client, getting some good deals, having their own interest, etc. So I think the whole scene has shifted a little bit, but I continue to be very, you know, bullish on this. And I think capital markets have a very important role to play in this overall, you know, for the world.
Mm. Yeah, and it's interesting you mentioned there the capital markets providing much necessary risk capital for those very large events, which hopefully by doing so can help the traditional insurance and reinsurance industry to focus on the attrition that really affects people's lives on a day-to-day basis as well. So Swiss Re has been notably absent from the cat bond market as a sponsor so far this year, though. Do you have a feeling for why this is? Is it just because the inward side is so attractive right now that you'd rather not share quite so much of the risk in that form?
Yeah, so you know, I'm a big fan of cat bonds. I think it's a very clean instrument that's worked very well, and I think it has a great, you know, time ahead of it. But we were very successful with the sidecars. There was a lot of interest this year. It came in, and that's people who are, you know, it's not just peak risks we see, but it's really people alongside us. And so with what we see we could take in, and this, it was, we had enough coverage. So there was no need for any cap bonds, but this is not to be overinterpreted for the future.
Sure. No, it makes perfect sense to partner on an unaligned basis when the market is in this sort of a position. It'd be good to hear your thoughts on the broader outlook for ILS, whether you feel perhaps that market is primed for growth again. Certainly, the investor base seems to be becoming increasingly keen to deploy capital, and the opportunity seems good right now.
Yeah, I think it's well, every capital market that has developed in a particular instrument goes through similar cycles. And there was a cycle, I remember in the beginning when I was in charge of the unit, we couldn't find any capital. It was so hard to you know, train people, convince people. And then obviously we have gone in a phase where there was a lot of capital and then too much. There was this pressure from the low interest rate environment. Lots of people came in. Every pension fund wanted to allocate a certain amount. And because there was not enough channels to allocate, I think it became unprofessional to a certain degree. And then people have burnt their fingers. And so some people retreated. But as usual, that means prices go back up. That means that the more professional players, they come back in the earliest, those who understand the risk the best and, you know, feel self-confident about it, which means that we're back to, I think, a healthy market in a growing market. So I think over time, if we can avoid some of the exuberance missteps, it's going to continue to grow and it's going to be a successful market because that really has a place in the economy and in society.
Absolutely. And if we think about, earlier on we spoke about efficiency, we spoke about the protection gap, and there's clearly a need to get more capital behind risk to help protect people and communities against disasters and also climate change effects. But what is Swiss Re doing here specifically? And do you have a view on sort of the interplay of yourselves as traditional reinsurer alongside capital markets and how that can help to drive protection forwards over time?
Yeah, so on the protection side, I think there's many different elements to it. There's I'll come to the capital market side, but also on the frontline side, as I said, in many instances, also in poorer countries, the governments are really important. So we have been working for more than 10 years with a special unit that is actually interacting with governments, helping them to build some risk model, understanding of the risk, or we're in institutions that are helping them to build some of the risk knowledge that's necessary. And there's now a significant amount of governments across the world that also protect themselves through us, through other reinsurers, through capital markets. So there have been some significant improvements there, and several of those have paid out. They have actually proven their value. So I think that's one angle to close the protection gap, where the government plays a role, which is more the emerging type economies typically. And then on the other side, I think all the work we've put in on the capital market side, developing all kinds of different instruments to attract different types of investors. Some are more in the cap bond funds, some are more in the sidecars. Then you have some sidecars that are less NatCat oriented, but with other things. So we're constantly innovating, and so do other plays, what we can offer to specific investors for their particular needs. And I think this will attract more professional investors over time to this market, and will help us in some of these peak perils in particular, I think, where it makes a lot of sense. If at some stage we manage to overcome the psychological element to it, let's say through robo advisory or people having some help through technology who tells them you should probably get protection and I can do it for you, the same thing that agents do today. But if you imagine a world where this becomes more digital and more people maybe take the step, if suddenly there was a demand boost, we will need all these instruments and pathways and streets we have built to the capital markets to satisfy this demand. So I think a lot of the architecture is in place, but the progress overall on this closing the protection gap has been frustratingly slow.
Yes, it has been slow, but actually you make a very sort of compelling pitch for a vision of the future there when you mention things like robo-advisory, and obviously you have your own IPTQ sort of digital white label type platform as well. So there's certainly a lot going on right now, which I think could help over time, but it's as ever, it's a slow process. I thought to wrap things up, perhaps we could hear some of your thoughts on the macro environment. It's been a very sort of volatile and a lot of fluctuation in macro in the economy and capital markets over the last few years. And we're still in an inflationary environment as well. And while people perhaps thought the US was heading for a soft landing, that now seems a little less certain. And I was wondering, do you have any thoughts on how this sort of environment could affect reinsurance and perhaps capital flows as well over the coming months?
Yeah, I know it's a very complicated environment. I think before we talk economy, we need to talk about geopolitics, because it maybe didn't play a role for a long time, but now it does again, much more, unfortunately. So there was a big cycle starting from the Second World War where there was more consensus. There were institutions that helped us to create probably the most prosperous time in human history. But the faith in this overall has been lost. In the last 10, 15 years, you can see things fall a bit apart. COVID has accelerated some of that. And now we're in a much more complicated geopolitical situation where there is an element of it falling apart into blocks and so on. And this then has consequences on the economic side, with the economy following that to a certain extent, which adds to the inflationary pressure. If you, you know, change all your value chains, you don't go for the cheapest place, you reshore it, etc. So we have this very high uncertainty on the geopolitical side, which is worrying, and then coupled with a lot of uncertainties on the economic side, also some of consequences from the low interest rate environment, the high debts we have built up, the COVID period where debts were, you know, increased phenomenally in many countries. And so to see through that and say how this is going to end is very complicated, very difficult. I think we just need to be open for all kinds of scenarios, how this will evolve. I would just say on a very macro level, in an environment where there's a huge uncertainty, clearly, you know, the role of reinsurers as ultimate shock absorbers is increasing. This is an important role to play to de-risk the world. So I certainly don't think we're going to get, you know, out of work anytime soon.
No, that's certainly true. There's a lot of volatility out there and a lot of work for insurers and reinsurers to do together. Christian, thank you very much for your time today. I really appreciate it. It's been great to talk to you.
Thank you. My pleasure.